Come be a part of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics with your host, Dr. Ed Holliday. Hear the voices of liberty speaking all across America. Doc Holliday provides thought-provoking interviews and commentary about the issues and actions that are afflicting this country and what we need to do to get America back on track. Get fired up. Get inspired. Get on board with Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right now.
And that's the sound of rock cracking. Once again, you've got Doc Holliday here on Rock Splitting Politics. I'm your host, Ed Holliday. You're listening to us on webtalkradio.net. That's webtalkradio.net. Good to have you. Another great week, the last week in the month of March. And we got a show packed in. Let me tell you, we got a little news. Then I'm gonna give you my take this week. The Supreme Court's deciding about gay marriage issues. I'll give you my quick take on that. And also, President Obama went somewhere. Never could find time to go to Israel in his first term, but he finally made it to the state of Israel. We'll have some comments about his speeches there. And like I said, then we'll have the father of the new United States Senator from the state of Texas, Ted Cruz, who's doing an outstanding job. He's only been in the Senate for less than 3 months and already making himself known. So we're going to be talking to his father, Rafael Cruz. This is an interview you will not want to miss. And I'm also going to tell you, we got this week's Tombstone of the Week Award going to the someone in the city of brotherly love. And who could that be? Stay tuned. You'll find out at the end of this show. Now, let's get right into the show. I'm going to show my age a little bit. For some of you new young libertarians, you may have heard the name Chevy Chase, may not have seen him in action, but one of the funniest skits that started off Saturday Night Live. It reminded me. Well, let me just play it, because there was a dictator from the World War II, before World War II even happened. And when he finally died, this went on week after week for a while, and it'll just get us right into the show. Let me play this clip.
And now, as a public service to those of our viewers who have difficulty with their hearing, I will repeat the top story of the day, aided by the headmaster of the New York School for the Hard of Hearing, Garrett Morris. Our top story tonight.
Our top story tonight.
Francisco Franco is still dead. Good night and have a pleasant tomorrow.
And in the spirit of Chevy Chase's reminding everyone that Francisco Franco is still dead, I have to remind everybody in my listening audience that Hugo Chavez, the former president of Venezuela, is still dead. The Marxist-Leninist dictator is still dead, and the people of Venezuela may have a chance to dig out of the ditch of socialism that he's put them in. Let's hope they do. But to remind you, the breaking news is Chavez, President Hugo Chavez, is still dead, and now we can get on with this show. And let me tell you, I have to remind my listeners, some longtime listeners, we talked about the gay marriage issue in the state of New York a couple years ago, had some good points on it. I'm not going to get deep down in this issue. I can tell you this. We saw where Hillary Clinton was paraded out, said she's now evolved and she's for gay marriage. How these people, I guess they believe in evolution because they're all evolving. President Obama evolved on gay marriage. Republican Senator from Ohio, conservative Ron Portman, he evolved on gay marriage. So why is everybody evolving? Well, this is my take. Look, if Hillary Clinton now is for gay marriage, then that means she's against polygamy. You know, she's discriminating against people who want to marry more than one person. She's discriminating against the polygamist. If I am for traditional marriage, and all of a sudden they call me a bigot because I'm discriminating against those who prefer gay marriage, then I have to say, well, you're discriminating against those who are for polygamy. You're discriminating against those who want to marry in their family, and you're discriminating against incestuous people. You're discriminating. You know, it's not like we can't have discrimination. Well, if we don't have any discrimination, then let's just open it up. Marry whoever you want. Is that, what does that mean? Well, marry, that means there's no incest. Okay, well, that means there's nothing against polygamy. There's nothing against marrying two men, marrying one woman, or two women marrying one man. What stops it if you start changing the definition of marriage? And that is what is not being talked about. If Hillary Clinton has evolved and she's now not discriminating against people who want gay marriage, then she is still discriminating against those who want polygamy, is she not? Simple solutions for America. We don't need gay marriage. We don't need polygamy. We don't need these things that have been established by law for thousands of years right here in America. The Republican Party was founded to fight against slavery and to make sure marriage was between one man and one woman. Some of you don't realize that about the Republican Party. In the 1850s, they would not let the Mormons be a part in their territory where they were unless they would commit to one man marrying a one woman. That's a foundation of Republican Party back in the 1850s, along with defeating slavery and freedom. So Republican Party needs to learn their history and stick to their roots. And why Hillary Clinton can evolve? Well, maybe she'll evolve back into a fish if that's where she came from. I don't know. But listen, good gracious, don't get so worked up on this thing. We got a good thing going. Why in the world would somebody want to change the definition of marriage? Now, let's get on this important business. Like, President Obama went to Israel. Did he say anything important? We saw some of the news people salivating like little puppy dogs over what he had to say. And I didn't really hear anything he had to say. He got on, he went over there and told the young people and people in his crowd that were listening that they needed to push their leaders to do more things. Now, if the president of Israel, if Prime Minister Bibi, came over here and went to the Congress and went to the campus and said, you need to force President Obama to back us, he's never come over and told us how to run our country. And yet, is that not what President Obama did over in Israel, saying, you need to get your leaders to change? Well, that's my take. Look, when I hear President Obama, I heard this takeoff of Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville. You can listen to it on the internet. I'll give you a link to that. But listen a little bit of this, because that's what America is. All over, it just reminds me of this little ditty written. Let's take a listen to this.
Wasting away again in Obamaville. Spending tax money from the government's vault. Some people claim that it's George Bush to blame, but I know Obama's fault.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. It is President Obama's fault. He doesn't seem to get any blame by the press or even the people. It's just that he is the leader of our country and everything goes bad. Can't be his fault. Must be George Bush's. Well, one day, I think people are finally starting to wake up. Some of these, what Rush Limbaugh calls the low information voters, those who just voted because they felt good, President Obama made them feel good. Well, that's going to finally wear out, folks. And someday, I don't know how or where, but they're going to start understanding that we got somebody that doesn't know how to create jobs. I wish they understood it for an election in November. But smoke and mirrors went on a little too long, and we got some people in America that need to be educated. And that's what we're going to do in just a few minutes with Rafael Cruz, the father of Ted Cruz. I'm going to play a little segment. We recorded this. I'm going to play a little segment of what he said, and we're going to have him on in just a minute.
You are a true patriot, man, and you are a voice much needed for freedom in America.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And
thank you, Doc. It's a pleasure and a privilege, and I'll tell you what, you are making a difference in America. Continue to be a voice crying in the wilderness, and I'll tell you what, you are making a difference. God bless you, God bless every one of our listeners, and let's fight and let's restore the greatness of this country. This is still the shining city on a hill.
Now, does that whet your appetite for the interview coming up with Ted Cruz? I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now, we had a great interview, and you're going to listen to the first half, and next week we're going to play the second half of Rafael Cruz, the interview. But before I get to the interview, I wanted to let you hear some of what his son, Ted Cruz, who just won the United States Senate in November. He had a very, very tough primary against a well-funded, rhino, established Republican candidate. And Ted Cruz won, standing on strong conservative principles, and it made him stand out to the voters because he would say what needed to be said on constitutional values. And listen to this little clip of what happened with him and Senator Feinstein, the leader on a committee trying to get rid of some of the Second Amendment's rights, our civil rights here in America. So hear what this young gun Ted Cruz had to say when everybody was telling him to back down. He stood up, and this is what he had to say.
If I might pose a question to the senior senator from California, in your response to Senator Cornyn, you mentioned that there's some 100 pages of the bill that specify particular firearms that if this bill were passed, Congress would have deemed prohibited. It seems to me that all of us should begin as our foundational document with the Constitution. And the Second Amendment in the Bill of Rights provides that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The term, the right of the people, when the framers included it in the Bill of Rights, they used it as a term of art. That same phrase, the right of the people, is found in the First Amendment, the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition their government for redress of grievances. It's also found in the Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. And the question that I would pose to the senior senator from California is, would she deem it consistent with the Bill of Rights for Congress to engage in the same endeavor that we are contemplating doing with the Second Amendment in the context of the First or Fourth Amendment? Namely, would she consider it constitutional for Congress to specify that the First Amendment shall apply only to the following books and shall not apply to the books that Congress has deemed outside the protection of the Bill of Rights? Likewise, would she think that the Fourth Amendment's protection against searches and seizures could properly apply only to the following specified individuals and not to the individuals that Congress has deemed outside the protection of the Bill of Rights?
Senator, yield for a question.
Let me just make a couple of points in response. One, I'm not a sixth grader. Senator, I've been on this committee for 20 years. I was a mayor for 9 years. I walked in, I saw people shot. I've looked at bodies that have been shot with these weapons. I've seen the bullets that implode. In Sandy Hook, youngsters were dismembered. Look, there are other weapons. I've been up, I'm not a lawyer, but after 20 years, I've been up close and personal to the Constitution. I have great respect for it. This doesn't mean that weapons of war, and the Heller decision clearly points out three exceptions, two of which are pertinent here. And so I mean, it's fine you want to lecture me on the Constitution. I appreciate it. Just know I've been here.
As you can tell, the senior senator from California got a little shook up. She wasn't used to getting questioned by a young whippersnapper that is also a fine lawyer. And that's why Ted Cruz is making ways in the United States Senate, ways for freedom, ways for the Constitution, And we are going to listen to why he has that strong devotion to the Constitution and conservative values. We're going to talk to his father right on the other side of this break. And this break is when I tell you and remind you, you're listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. We're glad you're listening to us. I want to remind you, we got some great shows in the past. Go back in the archives. Just last week, great show with Josh Withrow talking about Obamacare and what you can do to help stop this. It's not too late now. And we have some good friends at Freedom Works. Let me tell you, that's where I met Rafael Cruz. And that's why he is on our program today, Freedom Works. There's not a better organization that I know of that works down with the grassroots levels to make sure we have good, solid, conservative candidates. They work all over the country. And I want to tell you that you can go there and check them out. Just go on my homepage. Look at Matt Kibbe right there and just click on the picture of Matt Kibbe and Freedom Works and go there to their site. They got some great information on the issues, and they will get you fired up and make sure that we don't let the liberals take over this country and ruin it. We are going in a downhill slide. Our country can survive, but it's going to take you and me working together, and Rafael Cruz is going to tell us why in just a minute. And don't forget, you can get my book, Rock Splitting Politics, by going to my website. You can click on the homepage, order the books. That's what helps keeps us on the air, and we're glad you're listening to us, and we welcome our new listeners. Some people are listening to us for the first time, and I just want to remind you, after we have our interview with Rafael Cruz, the father of the United States Senator you just heard, talking to the senior senator from California and getting her straight and setting her straight about the Second Amendment. I just want to remind you, we got the Tombstone of the Week Award coming up. And like I said, it's going to someone from the City of Brotherly Love. For those who haven't heard our show before, the Tombstone of the Week Award is given to somebody for their words, actions, or deeds that should be buried 6 feet in the ground beneath the tombstone. So that'll be coming up. And right now, let's listen to my new good friend, Rafael Cruz. And for those who don't know, he was born in Cuba, and during the Batista regime, the tyranny of a military dictatorship, he was working to help overthrow that and had to leave the country. And he did believe in hope and change, and he believed in Fidel Castro until he saw the hope and change go straight to Marxism, socialism, communism. And then he refuted that from America. And now he's here, and let's talk to him. Rafael Cruz.
My brother, it was such a pleasure and a privilege to meet you a couple of weeks ago on that Freedom Works Summit in D.C. You are a true patriot, man, and you are a voice much needed for freedom in America.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and at the same time, I got so much hope talking to you and seeing what your son's doing, along with some of these new senators that are not afraid to run to the fight, and that's what we need.
Well, I'll tell you, absolutely. You know, they are... Ted, as well as some of those others, constitutional conservatives, they are in the lion's den. And
exactly.
The lions are roaring very loudly, but, you know, with God's protection, they are not going to... I know Ted is not going to bend. He's going to be a stalwart.
I can tell you,
voice for freedom and constitutional, you know.
All I knew about Ted is what I'd heard in the media and what I found out. And after I met you... when you say that, I know it's true, and it just gives me enthusiasm, gives me a stronger backbone to know that your son is in the United States Senate.
Well, you know, Doc, when we see a situation like what this country is going through today, it makes me think back of the late 70s when Jimmy Carter was in power. Wow. I mean, you know, it was when Jimmy Carter was in power, we had double-digit unemployment. We had 22% interest rate.
Oh, yes.
We had 18% inflation. We had a government so weak in foreign policy that Iran had become emboldened and had captured a whole bunch of Americans and kept them hostage for 444 days, you know.
Right.
Mm. And, but, you know, that gave us the Reagan Revolution. Looking at the how dire everything was in the Carter administration energized millions of Americans.
You're
and
right.
As a result, there was a sweep of the country of a new era of conservatism. And I think this is what Obama is going to trigger. Obama is going to be a catalyst to wake up millions of Americans that are fed up with seeing our country being eroded. I mean, this country has been the light of the world. That, you know, this country is the shining city on a hill.
It gives people hope for freedom.
Of course, of course. I mean, this has been the bastion of freedom for the world. And for this president to try to lower us down to a common lowest common denominator and basically start transferring our wealth to third world countries around the world and just talking about, no, we're just like the same other. No, no, we are a great country. We are the greatest country on the face of the earth. You know, Doc, I am so, so privileged to have been able to come to this country.
I
am so proud to be an American, my friend.
I know you have lived in tyranny, and I'd like for you to just tell our listeners a little bit about, you know, you've not only read, I mean, you've experienced pure tyranny, living in tyranny. And tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Well, that's true. You know, Doc, unfortunately, many people take freedom for granted. And it is perhaps only when you have lost your freedom that you appreciate the great value of freedom. You know, I grew up in Cuba.
Right.
And when I was a teenager, Cuba was being governed by a very brutal military dictatorship. Thousands of people were being killed in the streets. And as a result of that, a revolution got started in the high schools and the universities. I was in high school at the time, was 14 years old, and at 14 years old, I found myself involved in an underground movement.
Mm-hmm.
And involved in the revolution, I was involved in it for 4 years. Until I was captured, I was in prison, I was tortured, and it was only by the grace of God that I was able to leave Cuba and come to the land of the free and the home of the brave, you know. And I'll tell you, it was only by the grace of God that I wasn't killed.
You got so much to talk, and I know we don't have a lot of time, but at the same time, I do want, when you say you've been tortured, some of our listeners don't understand. Tell them what happened to you in the prison, Raphael.
Well, in prison, to give you an idea, they would try to. Of course, the idea was in the underground. We operated in small units, so maybe a half a dozen kids. And of course, what they would torture me for is so that I would tell them who my superiors were, so they could destroy the underground. And I'll tell you, the force of my strength was that I was convinced that I was going to be killed. Because other friends that had been captured before me had been killed. So I figure I'm going to be killed too. And that's what gave me the strength to endure. But they would beat you to a pulp, Doc. Just beat you to where you were numb. And it got to the point that you didn't feel any pain. You were just bloody all over, but you wouldn't feel any pain. And then they would take me and throw me in a small prison cell, no bed, no nothing, just laying on a concrete floor. And they would leave me there for about 4 hours. Now, 4 hours later, everything in your body hurt. And then they would take you out and go through it again. And this went on around the clock. Every 4 hours for about a week.
They just beat you with their fist?
With sticks, with boots. Mm-hmm. I got one kick in the back of my head that cracked my four front teeth in the top and the bottom. It was just brutal. And it was just, they would do this, and then they would go through the good cop, bad cop situation to try to break you down. And then they'll do this every 4 hours. Well, this lasted for about a week, and after about a week, and I just have to say this is divine interference.
Okay.
Because after about a week, I was called to the colonel's office and told, we're going to release you. But if a bomb explodes in this city, we're going to hold you responsible. And so they released me and began following me. And they had around the clock a couple of people watching me and following me. And it was at that time that the underground told me I had to leave the country because I was being a security risk with their following me all the time. And so I was able to get a four-year student visa and came to the United States with a visa to study at the University of Texas. And I left in a ferry boat, just laid down on the floor of the my father's car. And without these people knowing it, my father drove me to Havana, drove me to a dock, and I just boarded a ferry boat, that ferry boat that carried cars to Key West.
So you had to be sneaked out of the country.
Oh, yes, I had to be sneaked out of the country. And I got to Key West and then took a bus all the way to Austin, Texas. And came to Austin. I couldn't speak a word of English. Didn't have but a few dollars, most of that sewn to my underwear because my mother was convinced that sleeping on the bus for 2 days, somebody would steal my money.
Okay.
So I got to Austin, basically no money, not being able to speak the language, got a job as a dishwasher while I went to the University of Texas, worked full-time, went to school full-time, and that's how I paid for my university. Then after that, I became a political refugee and later on a resident and became a U.S. citizen. And I'll tell you, one of the great things about this country, you know, 55 years ago, I came here with nothing, not even being able to speak the language. And early this year, as I was sitting in the at the Senate floor, seeing my son being sworn in as a U.S. senator, was just so exhilarating. Only in America, Doc. Only in America.
That, Raphael,
this is the land of opportunity.
You this almost
is the land of freedom.
Bring tears to my eyes just telling me that story. Seeing your son sworn in as a United States senator. And what year did you become a United States citizen?
Well, I became a U.S. citizen years ago. I was in I came to the University of Texas in '57, and was there till '62. And for a short period, I was a political refugee until my residency could be
established,
obtained, established, and then later on, when my requirements were done, I became a citizen. I was very involved in the Reagan campaign. You know, we were talking earlier about the Carter administration.
Right.
And, of course, having been exposed to socialism in Cuba, I recognized the socialist tendencies of the Carter regime. And so I became very, very involved in the Reagan campaign of 1980. My son was 8, 9 years old. Our conversation around the dinner table centered on politics daily. And so my son grew up listening about conservative politics. And then I, while he was still in junior high, I introduced him to a man by the name of Roland Story, who was the president of an organization called the Free Enterprise Institute.
Okay.
And so here is Ted, 13 years old, and instead of reading comic books, he's reading Milton Friedman.
Wow.
He's reading von Mises. He's reading Friedrich Hayek, and he starts giving speeches on free market economics.
Wow.
And as he entered high school, Doc, this group, the Free Enterprise Institute, forms a group of five kids, calls them the Constitutional Corroborators.
Oh, wow.
And now these five kids memorize the entire U.S. Constitution and read the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, and during the 4 years of high school, they gave approximately 80 speeches throughout the state of Texas on free market economics and the Constitution. And wow. I'll tell you, that shaped his life.
I can understand. I never knew that about Senator Cruz. Wow.
Well, I'll tell you, before he left high school, he was passionate about freedom. He was passionate about the Constitution. And he knew without a shadow of a doubt what his life was going to be destined to be. Wow. That it would be to defend freedom, to defend the Constitution. And I'll tell you, you know, I don't know how many times I told him, Doc, you know, Ted, when I lost my freedom in Cuba, I had a place to come to.
Wow.
If we lose our freedoms here, where are we going to go? Now you tell me, Doc, if we lose our freedoms here, where are we going to go? There's no place to go.
Raphael, that very question, my 10-year-old asked me, Daddy, where will we go if we can't be free in America?
There's no place to go, Doc. And this is what we have to transmit to young people in America. We must be willing to fight to preserve the freedoms we've enjoyed in this country. You know, it is really sad. This generation of kids now stands to be the first generation in America that inherits a country less prosperous, less promising that the parents enjoyed. And we can't allow that to happen.
That's right, listeners. We cannot allow that to happen. Wow. We got so much talking with Raphael Cruz. We are going to continue on next week. You don't want to miss next week's show when we talk about some of the solutions that and the hope that Raphael has for this country and for the future. You got to listen to next week's show. And I wish we could continue on now, but it's time for the Tombstone of the Week Award, and it goes to someone from the city of brotherly love. Now, who is that someone? He happens to be Mayor Nutter. And maybe he is a nut. I don't know. But is Mayor Nutter. You know what happened up there? We get all this, the liberals and the left wing push the free press. Then we get left wingers in office. What happens? He just went out flat out crazy because somebody wrote an article that he didn't like, and he said it offended him. So what happens? Well, I'll tell you what happens. Mayor Michael Nutter writes in a letter to the Philadelphia Human Relations Commission, and he writes that he recognizes constitutional protections. Then he goes on and says, I ask the commission to evaluate whether the, quote, speech employed in this essay is not the reckless equivalent of shouting fire in a crowded theater. It's prejudiced, fact-challenged generalizations, and incitement to extreme reaction. Okay, and in this article from the Wall Street Journal, James Taranto calls it nuts to Nutter. And he says, the only real answer to Michael Nutter, the mayor, Michael Nutter's question is nuts. That's the same letter that the same word that was used by a general in World War II when the Nazis asked him to surrender in the Battle of the Bulge. He said nuts. So we have to say the same thing right here to Michael Nutter. And the article that was written is called Being White in Philly by Robert Huber, and it was the magazine's March issue cover story. And it's talked about what race is and describes it in a largely segregated city with uneasy boundaries in culture and understanding from the standpoint of white people. Well, this is the thing that I've worked with in the last few years. If you can't sit down and discuss race from heart to heart, and if you try to do something and you try to let truth be known, and somebody cuts you down at the legs and throws things at you and tries to destroy what you're trying to do. Listen, we have to be able to communicate. And the Mayor Nutter, sounds like a mad hatter, doesn't it? Mayor Nutter of Philadelphia, in a city of brotherly love, if he can't sit down and talk and pick up the phone and say, let's talk. But no, he turns them into the what commission I told you is the Philadelphia Human Relations Commission. Wants to see if he can throw the book at him and for outrageous writing just because he didn't like it. That's not freedom of speech. That's not freedom of speech at all. That's not America. That's Philadelphia. And I'm telling you what, when you get liberals elected year after year without any Republican or conservative counterweight or voice, you'll see what happens in Detroit. It's a city that's going through an economic sinkhole. Nobody wants to be like Detroit. Philadelphia is going to try to copy them if they keep going that way. Listen, in the land, in this very city where Benjamin Franklin ran his press, and now the mayor, it wants to turn somebody into the Human Relations Commission and stomp free speech. Where is the ACLU when you need them? I hope they'll stand up and tell Mayor Nutter he's a nut. Don't hold your breath on that. But let me just say that Mayor Nutter, for his actions of just disregarding totally the First Amendment rights of a newspaper, a magazine, he gets this week's Tombstone of the Week award because his actions should be buried 6 feet beneath the ground under a tombstone. Now, how about that? Listen. That's why you're listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You're going to hear stories here you won't hear anywhere else. And I want to make sure that you understand next week we have the second half of the interview with none other than the father of United States Senator Ted Cruz. You're finding out why Ted Cruz is made of the stuff, the timber he's made of. He's made of some strong timber. He's got some intellectual background, and he's built it up his entire life because you see how his father has trained him, his father who's lived through tyranny like we will, most of us in this country won't ever understand. But he's lived through it and he loves freedom. That's why he was at Freedom Works. That's why he's not afraid to stand up and tell us what it's like if we keep sliding into this socialism and communism. That's where we're headed, folks. If you and me don't get up and get out and work together, we have no choice. We got to save freedom. So be sure to listen to next week's show with Ted Rafael Cruz, and be sure to keep working for freedom. Rock Splitting Politics is going to back you up. We're going to come here. We'll learn some things you may have not learned anywhere else. Tell your friends and neighbors. Keep linking us. We're growing because of you, and I can't wait for next week's show, and I hope neither can you. Next week, see you then.
Thanks for joining us today, and remember to listen again next week for another edition of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You can order Ed's new book, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, Tea Party versus the Status Quo, by clicking on the book cover right in front of you on the screen. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.